All right, the committee will come to order. Representative Hayden will move the minutes of the April 1st meeting. Any questions? All in favor of those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Murphy will move Senate file. Representative Powell will move the adoption of the division report for Senate file 29, which is a licensing bill that passed an omnibus licensing bill and was non-controversial, as I understand it. All in favor of the motion on the moving the adoption of the division report, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Murphy moves that House file, or Senate file 29, be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. And it's, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a piece of legislation I've been working on dealing with vaccines and pharmacy, and we're still trying to work out a little bit of an issue with the Department of Human Services, and this would allow me to get that work done.
Okay. All right. All in, any questions on that?
Aye.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Norton, Representative Powell moves adoption of the division report for Senate file 230. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, no. And members, on this, we're going to put on the language of the STS language from last night. This bill actually has a companion in the Senate. The one we put it on last night doesn't, so this we can actually meet deadlines this way. So that's really all we're doing. So Representative Norton will move the we'll move Senate File 230 to recommend a pass and refer to Finance, and move the DE1 amendment, which is the amendment as we did it from last night. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails, and Representative Norton renews her motion that Senate File 230 be recommended pass and referred to Finance. Seeing no discussion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. We'll wind up here.
Representative Thiessen moves that House File 1760 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. And Representative Thiessen has an author's amendment, the A2 amendment. And Representative Thiessen, you want to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, thank you.
To get the bill in the shape that the author would like to consider it. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the continuing care policy bill from the department. It's a technical bill in its currently, and let the department explain what's in the bill.
Madam Chair, my name is, and members, my name is Deb Schiebenauer, and I work for the Department of Human Services and Continuing Care. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on our policy bill. We've prepared a background sheet, which should be in your packets. It looks like this. It's organized by area. I will be testifying on behalf of Aging and Adult Services. Greg Chabelle will be testifying on behalf of Nursing Facilities, and Amy Devil will talk regarding Disability Services Division. So if we can begin, let me start with the first provision regarding the Alternative Care Program third-party liability. This is Section 5 and 6. This section clarifies in statute that this is any other health care program that alternative care is the payer of last resort. Third party would be billed prior to alternative care. And it also requires that we report that information and maintain that in the state system. The next provision, Section 7, removes some obsolete language regarding the alternative care pilot program. Hennepin County had a pilot program which they wound down in 2005, and this removes obsolete language regarding that program that no longer exists. The next provision is Section 8 that I'm going to speak to, the elderly waiver clarification of eligibility. This language further clarifies healthcare eligibility standards for maintenance needs allowance. This language only clarifies what is already in law regarding the health care eligibility requirements. There's no change in any kind of eligibility requirement, and it's just a clarification in our statute. The next section, which is section 19 that I will speak to, refers to data retention for adult protection. In 2008, all the adult protection data is maintained in a statewide database. This simplifies the varying retention dates and ensures that data retention is in compliance with federal fiscal data retention requirements. And it continues to require that data is destroyed according to the retention schedule. And with that, I'm Grace Bell will speak.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Spell from the Department of Human Services. Section 9 of the bill is a paperwork reduction, more or less. Currently, facilities, if they miss a deadline, they are required to do some small addition to their project in order to qualify, requalify for filing for a construction project rate adjustment. It is simply a way to avoid facilities having to do drive another nail and file some more paperwork to get the thing completed and file for the rate adjustment. Section 10 relates to separate billing for certain services. This is a clarification that all facilities will do things in the same manner now. All transportation and therapy will be fee-for-service and not included in the rate. Section 12 and Section 13 is a clarification on some definitions. We found that it was ambiguous as to what types of training go where. The definition clarification says that anything related to hands-on training for resident care goes in the direct care category, and anything else goes in the administrative category.
All right, thank you. Members, I'm not seeing any questions here, but please raise your hand if you have any as we go along. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Amy Dowell, Continuing Care Administration. I have the last two sections. The first is the self-directed option. In 2007, the legislature had passed that provision, and the final federal regulations came down that indicated that we were not able to require home care targeted case management. And so this change allows for more individuals to be able to help provide support to the planning for the self-directed option.
And which section are you referring to?
Right. This is Section 3, my apologies.
Section 3.
Mm-hmm. And then Sections 2, 3, and 19 are related to a statewide advisory committee for ICF, and there was funding that was provided in 2001, and since then the funding is no longer available, and that funding was to do downsizing, closures, and relocations. And given that the funding is no longer available, we're striking the references to the advisory council that distributed that funding. In Section 15, we're striking some duplicative language that has to do with quality improvement.
Excuse me one second. We do have a question from Representative Loeffler. I'm going to just have you pause.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Dilla. If we were to look again at downsizing ICFMR, do we need to have to comply with federal regulation or best practices, the advisory committee that we're deleting here?
Ms. Dilla.
Representative Loeffler and members, I would think that we would be able to reassemble the statewide advisory council, but I do not believe that it's required.
Okay, please proceed.
Mm-hmm. Section 15 is related to quality improvement plans, and this is a duplicative requirement of another section in law that already references individual service plans, consumer quality improvement, and consumer satisfaction surveys. And then Section 16, 17, and 21 eliminate outdated references to rule and sections in law. And then the last section, Section 18, that I'll discuss is changing a quarterly report requirement to an annual report requirement.
Okay, members, questions? That's covering a lot of material here in a short period of time, so. Okay, not seeing any. Okay, thank you, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. I'd also like to move the A3 amendment, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair, which is a number of bills that have previously passed the committee. So it's the newborn screening language is here, the compendia from Representative Norton, which is sections 3 and 4. Section 5 again relates to the newborn screening program as section 6 does, section 7, 8, 9, and 10, and 11. And this is all language that passed out of the committee or has been amended subsequently in a later committee. A root cause analysis is section 12, which is language that's been worked out related to the staffing issue that we had, as I understand it. Section 13 is language, I don't even remember where that one came from, to be honest, but it's a licensing provision. Section 14 is the suicide prevention plan, which has passed this committee and is sitting on the floor right now. And that section 14 and 15. Section 16 is the prescription expiration date, moving from 2 years to 1 year, which we've discussed in the past. Section 17 is a certified doula provision, which is Representative Lane's provision, which is, I think, also sitting on the floor. And section 19 is the Safe Patient Handling Act, which was worked out with Representative Fritz's bill and is non-controversial in committee. Section 19 is language about 911 referrals to mental health crisis teams. This has been changed since it was in our committee to be permissive. And that is, oh, and then there's a work group that's related to the staffing issue in section 21. So these are all bills that have passed our committee and in the form that they passed the committee.
Okay, thank you. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen, can you just outline, just the DNA thing went to civil law, right?
Yes.
Can you just outline what changes?
I don't think any changes were made.
Oh, so you said there were some changes there. What?
No, changes made to, no changes to that bill.
Thank you.
All right, other questions? Representative Bry.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Thiessen. So these bills passed the committee, but they're not in the possession of our committee, and so you're just pulling the bills. Help me understand how you're fitting it all together. So we're essentially putting those back into this committee through this amendment.
Representative Steve.
These are all bills that are on the floor. I think they're all at the floor right now. And so, but instead of hearing 17 different bills on the floor, we're creating basically a policy out of this bill.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the Representative Thiessen. So this will be the policy, health care policy omnibus bill for the year?
Representative Thiessen.
Yes.
Madam Chair and Representative
Thiessen.
So we aren't going to see another compilation of bills going forward?
This is our, Madam Chair, this is our last meeting.
Okay, so we're not going to be called back to act on other bills, Madam Chair and Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, my intention is today will be the last meeting. I don't have any, yeah.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Thiessen, why do we need to do this again? Is it just a matter of ease on the floor? I guess you're pulling some pretty controversial bills together. It seems like they ought to have full discussion on the floor, and with the new rules related to debate on the floor, my concern is that the goal is really to squelch debate on these pretty controversial issues when the Rules Committee is going to determine that there's 10, 20, 15 minutes, whatever they determine on a bill. On the controversial bills, I think it would be much better that they move on their own and stand and fall and debate alone. And so I guess I'm concerned about the move.
Madam Chair, and these are part of it is to move along. My intent on the newborn screening is that will go alone, we'll include that in here, but we'll also I think you're right about that. We should debate that standalone on the floor, and it is on the floor right now, and that would be my intention on that.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, and Representative Thiessen, then why does it need to be in here?
Because I'd like it in here as well, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Representative Broad, it is what it is.
Well, that depends on what is.
Yes, it does. It depends on what is. All right, other members. Okay, I have a question, actually, for Representative Murphy. I understand there's some language in here that's a result of some additional work that's been done, and could you just address that for us? I don't think we debated the new language in this committee. I might be mistaken, but if you could just kind of explain what you've done with that and where it's gone.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We heard language related to looking at the root cause analysis under the adverse events law and adding as a factor staffing as a way to do some, using a known process to do some analysis on whether or not staffing is impacting some of the adverse events happening in facilities. There has been a tremendous amount of work done on a number of parties, including in the Senate, the Whigs and Rhodes. And to be honest with you, I haven't been a part of all of this to date in negotiation, but I want to thank the parties who have been participating in this work, because I think this has been a difficult issue, and I think that while, you know, none of us are probably in love with this, it does achieve the goal. So the language has been amended under the root cause analysis. So it will read, in conducting the root cause, and I'm going to read this because it's kind of sprinkled throughout the bill, in conducting the root cause analysis, if evidence determines staffing is a factor, then the facility will review the impact of staffing levels on the event. The language, and that's all. That's the only statement now that's going to be in root cause analysis. The language that looked like or was referred to as whistleblower language, in the bill that we looked at in policy previously, is then redrafted to express some comfort for the nurses in the same way that facilities are protected in adverse events. So working within the frame of blameless reporting, which is the intention of adverse events, saying that if a licensed healthcare provider reports an event to the facility, then the licensing board is not required to do an investigation. They may do an investigation, but they're not required to do an investigation. So they're putting the providers on the same playing field as the facilities in the framework of adverse events. And then finally, the Hospital Association and the Nursing Association, in consultation with the Department of Health, will get together to talk about the questions that could be used when conducting a root cause analysis. And the Department of Health, I've talked with Dan Riddick at the Department of Health. They are fine with that. I've talked with a number, but not all of the hospitals about this language, and there are various reactions to it. But so I couldn't call it Peachna Valley or Kumbaya. But I did talk with the folks at Mayo, and I think that they are not going to object at this point to the language. And from my perspective, this represents a lot of hard work in a very difficult session, and I hope that we can move this forward, get the work done that needs to be done in relationship to this, and then we can focus our efforts on the hard work at hand that we have before us in healthcare.
Okay, thank you, Representative Murphy. And I have Representative Broad, but is it to this point, Representative Broad, because we have, okay, and Representative Norton to this point?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Murphy for the work that she's done. I know she worked over the interim on the issue, and some of the hospitals that we represent did raise concerns, and she went back to the table, as did others, and worked really hard to see if she couldn't find compromise, and I just want her to know, and the committee to know, how much I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Norton. And Representative Murphy, did you want
to? Madam Chair, thank you. I also, you know, a lot of due thanks to a lot of participants. I'm not going to name them all, but I also want to thank Representative Houston for his help on this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Okay, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move to delete sections 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Madam Chair, that's the newborn screening language.
All right, would you repeat those for me, Representative Broad?
1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. I think I have all of them. Maybe staff can double check.
All right. Representative Broad is moving to delete sections 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11.
And 20, Madam Chair.
And 20.
And Madam Chair, I ask for a roll call.
And a roll call has been requested. Do members need some more time to look at what's being deleted here? Are there any questions on the amendment? Any discussion? All right. Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Liebling?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Gabler?
No.
Broad?
Yes.
Bunn? Emmer? Fritz?
No.
Gardner?
No.
Gottwald?
Yes.
Hayden?
No.
Huntley? Kelly? Lane?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
Mack?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Norton?
No.
Rood?
No.
Tau?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
There being 5 ayes to 12 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Madam Chair, I do have one technical change. I don't think we've adopted the amendment yet, right? Okay. I'd like to incorporate it on line 11.7. Strike the 2 where it is and insert the 2 after the word and.
Okay.
If I could just incorporate that into
yes.
the amendment.
The amendment is to strike on line 11.7. Strike the numeral 2 in parentheses and to reinsert it after the word and.
Correct.
Okay, we'll incorporate that. Okay, then we're going to vote on the amendment.
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to roll call on the amendment, please.
All right. On the amendment, Representative Broad requests a roll call. Is there any more discussion on the amendment before we vote?
And Madam Chair, this doesn't have to do with newborn screening. Oh, on the amendment itself. Okay. Yeah, I did. You're right.
Right. The vote is on the A3 no. amendment. All right. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Liebling.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Broad.
No.
Bunn. Emmer. Fritz.
Yes.
Gardner.
Yes.
Gottwald.
No.
Hayden.
Yes.
Huntley.
Yes.
Kelly.
No.
Lane.
Yes.
Loeffler.
Yes.
Mack.
No.
Murphy.
Yes.
Norton.
Yes.
Rood.
Yes.
Tau.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
There being 13 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, we will, is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Broad.
Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call on the bill. Just turning a technical bill into a controversial vehicle, I think, is a really unfortunate thing. I understand, Representative Thiessen, you want to have things in a number of places. I get that, and I get that it's your prerogative to do so. It just seems like things ought to have the strong debate and the full debate, and we ought to vote on things in the way that gives the most transparency and openness to the folks who are interested, and I think this goes the wrong direction.
And Madam Chair, we've had full debate on every single one of these bills.
Okay. Other discussion. Representative Norton.
Through that discussion, Representative Thiessen, as I understand, this controversial part of this bill is something that has been worked on over the interim and over the summer, and it's my understanding that while this particular the new board screening aspect is not to my liking, and I think I've shared that with you, it was the compromise that was reached with the governor's office and the department. Is that not correct?
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
All right. Other discussion. Representative Adler.
Well, I have a request. And good people disagree on different elements of this bill, and this is a matter that I have a process request. I happen to support the newborn screening part, and so this isn't as hard of a vote for me, but I do request that the committee chair would talk to the rules committee chair and let them know this is not a simple bill, and that there's a couple elements that people find controversial in this, and if they could allow for adequate time on the floor, that would show. I think this is a convenience, and I'm not going to question anybody's motives about why they do things, but at least if the system that we have set up would allow for adequate time for the debate on the floor for every element that's controversial, which I would suggest could be 2 or 4 hours, but that would be reasonable, and I think that's my request.
All right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Anything to say?
Madam Chair, I agree, and I agree.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion, members? Representative Murphy.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I happen to be lucky enough to sit on the Rules Committee along with Representative Hayden. We can make sure the committee members understand that we need a little extra time on this.
Thank you. Other discussion? All right. If not, we will vote on the bill. Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 1760, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye. Oh, I'm sorry. Roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Liebling.
Yes.
Thiessen.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Broad.
No.
Bunn. Emmer.
Yes.
Fritz.
Yes.
Gardner.
Yes.
Thotwell.
No.
Hayden.
Yes.
Huntley.
Yes.
Kelly. Lane.
Yes.
Loeffler.
Yes.
Mack.
No.
Murphy.
Yes.
Norton.
Yes.
Rood.
Yes.
Tao.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
There being 13 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Representative Clark.
I'll move that House File 213 be Senate File 213 be recommended pass and referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The bill that's before you is the Senate version, Senate File 213. I'm going to accept that version. They made some changes to the original House file. And basically, what this bill does is allow those families that get WIC vouchers to be able to purchase organic food that is cost neutral. In other words, it doesn't cost more than other food within a certain range that the department declares. And the list of those WIC allowable foods will have to meet the federal requirements and will then be noticed to the folks who are using them. Now, this is a matter of consumer choice in terms of being able to purchase organic food. It's something I've been working on for quite a few years, but the Senate put in this cost-neutral issue, and it became a very non-controversial bill, and I think it passed the Senate floor 56-4 the other day. And I do have one witness who I'd like to...
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. I also worked on this issue for a very long time. Also, in my capacity, I serve as the chairman of the State Organic Advisory Task Force, which advises the Commissioner of Agriculture on organic issues. It is made up of industry, people, farmers, grocers, lots of different state agency types, and this has been one of our recommendations for several years. that would allow more organic foods to be purchased or organic foods to be purchased in WIC. Of course, it's not the Commissioner of Agriculture's decision to make. Just so you know, too, this is a state, the federal government gives states the ability to make this decision. And you can imagine the cost, if people are familiar with organics, that it is more expensive, and that's where the controversy comes in. This bill, it was amended, we worked on it in the Senate, where it passed 58-4, would say that the department should evaluate and develop lists. Let's say there are many items that are cost neutral, for example, or similar or like cost, so it's not going to cost the taxpayers more to fund for this program. So, for example, the state of Washington allows this. They allow fruits and vegetables from bread, brown rice, bulgur, oatmeal, legumes, tofu, and soy beverages. I know in working with people in the industry that like some cereals, some soups are also, that are manufactured here in Minnesota are also close to being in this price range. And this is a big issue that comes up for a lot of folks that that want to buy organic, that are on the lower income, and they find out that they can't purchase these products with WIC coupons. So we urge your consideration of this. We think it's a good step forward. It's a doesn't have any cost per se, and to the program, and I'd urge your consideration. Thank you.
Any questions, members? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question. I just wanted to thank Representative Clark for bringing this, and I think this is really important because, ever since my kids were little, there's always concern about, substances that are in the food, especially for the youngest kids. So, these are our youngest, most vulnerable kids, and, pregnant women, little children. I think this is a great step forward, so thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, I like the intent of this bill, too. I've been an advocate for public health efforts, and organic foods are a good thing. I'm also a grocer in my private life. So one of my questions kind of goes to that. How are, vendors right now have a hard enough time knowing exactly what's on the list, and now we're kind of adding really some new elements, some good elements, but some new elements to the list. How are we going to make sure that they're clear and aren't confused about what's included and what's not included? And then maybe I'll ask my second question, Mr. Chair, because they're kind of related, and that is the list, as I understand it, WIC is a federal program, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the federal government that authorizes what it's to be used for. Is this something that you're going to need the federal waiver on, or
Reverend Park?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that the federal government gives us, gives states the ability to make these kinds of decisions. And in the past, the hang-up was, are we going to have a higher-priced food and not as much volume? We take care of that with the Senate version of this bill. And it's good to know, I think, too, that organic foods, the cost has been moving down in comparison to other foods, so there's a lot more choice there. And I also understand that, the answer to your first question about how well grocers and how will the consumers know, my understanding is that the list is put together by the health department. They put posters together. And I'm hoping, and maybe we can talk with them more, too, they are in my committee jurisdiction, make sure that they provide timely information to grocers and others. And I'm not sure how often, maybe Mr. Peterson knows, but they do provide, and we do say in here that they shall add to the list those that will be allowed. So in terms of, it being a timely list, we could perhaps insert that word or at least let them know that that's the intention.
Any further discussion? Representative Blossom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. I really appreciate this, and I think it's going to help not only people who are looking for good, safe, healthy food for their children, but I think it's also going to help us in our outreach efforts, because I'm always concerned when I see young families talking about being dependent on food shelves and not realizing that this is an opportunity for them at getting fresh fruits and vegetables and health in a healthy way into their diet, and I'll support our co-op. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those. I'll renew my motion that Senate File 213 be recommended passed and sent to the General Register. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
I was going to say, it's nice to be here with the Nurses Caucus. I see they're almost all here. In this room, and 4 minutes.
Okay. Representative Haas is on his way down. All right. I will move the House File 1708, Representative Haas. Be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And you have an A1. Did you want to do that now or wait?
Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment.
A2.
And with a slight modification.
Do you want to do that first?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, the modification would be to delete on line 2.20, currently a patient.
Okay, we'll just incorporate that. So it's line 2.20, we're deleting currently a patient.
Correct.
Let's do this one first. Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing that, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion prevails. Is the A1 yours? Why don't you go through the bill if that's not part of your presentation?
Mr. Chair.
And then we'll do it.
The A1 is not my amendment, and I think it'd be important to go through the bill.
Great.
First. House File 1708 is a department bill dealing with some technical changes, dealing with mental health services, does some rate-setting methodologies, addresses some supervision for certain mental health practitioners and community workers. And with that said, I will allow the specifics to be addressed by the department through on the many sections in this bill.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Zuckel.
And members, just interrupt as we go through the bill. I think that's the easiest way to, if you have questions about a particular section. Yeah, and you don't have to interrupt. Okay, I was looking at everybody. Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my name is John Zockel from DHS. I'll go over the first two sections, and then I'll ask my colleagues to do the rest. Section one relates to adult mental health rehabilitative programs. Back about 4 or 5 years ago, we began dual diagnosis treatment in these programs for co-occurring mental illness and chemical dependency. And we developed certification standards to make sure that staff in these programs were qualified to do and integrate a dual diagnosis approach. The concern came up at that time that whether those staff would also have to have a license as a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. And what was worked out was a temporary exemption from that provision. That's actually been already extended once. That has worked very well, and so we're now proposing to eliminate that sunset. Okay. Section two is in response to our discussions with counties regarding mandate simplification. The counties came to us and pointed out this requirement in statute for a county to do a level of care determination for a child who's being admitted to a hospital. They pointed out that the hospital does the same thing all over again, and so there's really no need for that redundant level of care determination. That's what we're eliminating. And then I'll ask John Anderson to talk about the adult mental health parts of the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is John Anderson. I work for the Department of Human Services Mental Health Division. And Section 3 expands the number of staffing categories for this service to include certified peer specialists. This was an oversight in the original legislation that passed last year. Um, And that's likewise with Section 4 that relates to the same issues. Section 5, John, do you want to cover that? That's all. Oh, it just requires the host county to recommend one medical assistance rate to be paid for each non-residential provider. Requires the host county to document the proposed cost for residential and non-residential services. It requires that the cost be allowable, allocable, and reasonable, and consistent with federal requirements. In this section, we're simply codifying kind of the existing practice of the department that we've engaged in since 2005. Essentially, what it does is it references federal cost standards, which are important to underscore because it's a uniform standard. There are accepted cost principles. These are federal dollars that are in play. These are federal standards. It will improve our ability to hold providers accountable for their costs. It enhances our stewardship role, our oversight. It clarifies what is allowable and reasonable as a cost. These are standards that the department has used in auditing various other programs. These are standards that that our own DHS auditors, the Attorney General's Office, have recommended that we adopt. There are standards that are in place in many other states, including New York, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Dakota, and Iowa. They've all taken a similar approach to audit standards for their providers when federal dollars are in play. Section 7 relates to the qualifications of mental health rehab workers. What it does is it adds a little bit more flexibility in qualifications for entry-level staff working in assertive community treatment programs and intensive residential treatment. Doesn't change it by much, but it adds some flexibility. Section 7, adult crisis stabilization qualifications. Again, that's adding the certified peer specialist. And then 9, do we get down to community health worker? Is that yours?
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Cox with the Children's Mental Health Division at the Department of Human Services. I'm going to be handling Section 9 and then the remainder of the bill. Section 9 addresses community health workers and allows community health workers to be supervised by mental health professionals. A community health worker under current law can bill medical assistance for patient education and care coordination, and it's been an effective healthcare outreach activity, particularly in recent immigrant communities. This section would simply allow mental health professionals to supervise community health workers and therefore bring the benefits of community health workers to adults and children with mental health needs. Section 10 has three changes. The first is kind of a technical change, clarifying that direct service time definition in CPSS is not limited to psychotherapy. Let me say this, the rest of the bill is going to be dealing with the Children's Mental Health Rehabilitation Service. We call that Children's Therapeutic Services and Support, or CPSS, but it's the rehab service.
Can they answer the question?
Thanks. In Section 9,
yeah.
Just a question, and I don't mind the proposal, but if you expand how many people can do things, doesn't that cost money, and wouldn't there be a fiscal cost to allow more people to have more access to this service based upon a policy change?
This doesn't change any concurrent practice. I think it's just the drafting of this talked about psychotherapy being the only was the only thing mentioned.
No, it's the community health worker who can oversee them. So there'd be more of them. You said there'd be more of them working, you know, because of this.
Yeah. We looked at this from a fiscal point of view and determined that it would be cost neutral. And in fact, when the community health workers first became part of medical assistance, the department did a fiscal note, and there was it actually produced a saving.
All right, Mr. Chair, just my ongoing talk about looking at licensed professional clinical counselors in the medical assistance. The testimony at the hearing was it wouldn't cost anything hardly, and then it came back with a large fiscal note. Now it's a medium, and meaning the small size fiscal note. And I just hope you could say the same thing about licensed professional clinical counselors. If they could be allowed to work, they're cheaper, and they'll provide costs and save a bunch of money. So maybe you could have the same group that looked at this and said it's nothing to look at them and say it's nothing to. Maybe that's a homework assignment. Thank you.
Did you say that they saved money?
We're not claiming that this particular change will save money.
Okay.
But, several years ago when community workers were first brought into medical assistance, it did.
Okay. I got it.
This isn't that big a change. Thank you. Then also in Section 10, there's some language that defines mental health behavioral aid services, and the purpose of this language is to address some widespread confusion among consumers and providers over the purpose and the function of mental health behavioral aid. In particular, it distinguishes the mental health behavioral aid, which is a mental health services, from personal care assistance, or PCA. There's been a lot of confusion between the two paraprofessional workers. This section also deals with...
Can I ask a question on that? Well, I suppose I can. So, we had some discussion of this in the autism world. Is this not to open up a can of worms here, but what effect is that going to have on how that reimbursement takes place? I don't know if I'm asking a very direct question, but it's ringing some kind of bell in my head.
I think mental health behavioral aids, again, that's a paraprofessional worker. We think that would, that became part of the CPSS when it was enacted in 2003 and implemented in 2004. There hasn't been a great deal of use of it since that time, largely because of the confusion that's existed. But we think that, for example, with the common model of applied behavioral analysis that a lot of the providers are using in the state, we think that the mental health behavioral aids would be, that their paraprofessionals would be equivalent to the mental health behavioral aid in terms of skill level training and billing, which would, we think, allow then the ABA providers to use behavioral aid, and I don't want to project, but perhaps deliver the services a little
that's
bit.
That's enough for me. Okay. Everything hot.
And Mr. Chair, just so the committee is aware that some clarification in that section with skills training is being worked on in an amendment. It didn't meet the 24-hour deadline, but it's mutually agreed upon, and it's going to clarify that it's not going to affect any eligibility or qualification.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, again, members of the committee, again, that leads into the next point. The skills training is really where a lot of the questions have come up, and what we're hearing is one side suggesting that this is the changes we're making on the definition of skill training will expand the availability, and others are suggesting that it would constrict the availability. And what it really does is clarify that skills training is a mental health treatment service, it cleans up the statute to be consistent with current practice standards, basically.
Okay.
The confusion, again, if I'm going on too long for...
No, are you going to work this out? I mean, is this going to be worked? It's okay. I think, unless people have questions about it, if Representative Haas is going to continue to work on it, that's fine with me.
Okay. Then in Section 11, this regards therapeutic preschool, and it simply clarifies that in CTSS, when we refer to preschool, we're talking about a therapeutic preschool. In Section 12, it eliminates local certification for CTSS providers. We think this will streamline CTSS certification process, and it will also eliminate a county mandate. This is a change that counties and providers have asked us to make. Section 13 deletes a redundant coordination mandate. The language requires children receiving county case management services to have their services coordinated with CTSS providers. There are at least two other places in statute that require this kind of coordination, so we think it's redundant. In Section 14, I don't know if Representative Haas, if you want to talk to that. The Senate made a change in Section 14 on the 23rd. We had thought that would come forward to the House file. The Senate did was incorporate some language that represents an agreement between the department and the Minnesota Council for Child Caring Agencies, which changes the minimum standard and minimum requirement for a day treatment program. The current standard is 3 hours. This would allow the minimum program requirement to be 2 hours. And there's also some language in there that requires, I'm sorry, I got my sections mixed up. This is the section that has to do with the requirement that a mental health professional observe a mental health practitioner sometime during the first 12 hours of each new client that practitioner sees. And some of the practitioners are extremely qualified and don't need that level of supervision. Section 15 is a technical amendment. It corrects some language regarding CTS service team members. Section 16, that was the day treatment language. I'm sorry for the confusion on that. Again, that would set the minimum program requirement, not the per child requirement, but the minimum program requirement at 2 hours per day. One of those hours would have to be psychotherapy, and the remainder would be the psychotherapy or skills training. This section also sets a minimum requirement of 2 hours per day for therapeutic preschool. Section 16, this is where it talks about what a mental health behavioral aid does. The first reference was the definition. This talks about what the behavioral aid does. And it addresses a lot of confusion among providers and consumers on what behavioral aid is supposed to be doing.
And any further questions on this part of the bill? Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Representative Norton moves the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, in talking with some of the folks that will be involved with this, these law changes were new last year, and people are still trying to get their head around what's happening. One of the concerns is about rate setting. And so what this amendment does is take out language on page 4 and 5 about adjustments based on actual costs in units. And there's a formula put in here, and I think there's some concern and confusion that the folks that will be affected by this haven't been to the table and are a little worried that this is moving awfully quickly without proper input. And so what this does is remove those sections and put in a section that will have so the commissioner would be in charge of recommending a new statewide rating methodology, and that these folks will be at the table to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, this is an area that I believe could come to some compromise. I'm not sure if your amendment is exactly the direction that we need to go. I do believe there needs to be some methodology established when it comes to reimbursements for our ERTs and ACTs.
But I also am a strong believer that there needs to be a collaborative approach where the input of all those providers are included in the process. I was trying to work on language that would be mutually acceptable between the parties. I think we're getting to that direction. I could accept the amendment at this time, but with the acknowledgement that it's, we need to make sure that we do have some kind of methodology established, and we can work that out with the Senate, who has the existing language in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate that, Representative Haas, and so I'll renew my amendment if there's no further discussion.
Any further questions on that? Okay, seeing no further questions, all in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Any further discussion on the bill? Oh, we have people that want to speak to it. Sorry. Mr. Goodno? Mr. Amberg? Yeah, we have two more bills to go, and so you know the deal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Phil Amberg, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Mental Health Residential Facilities. With the changes in Representative Hosh's comments about working together going forward, we're okay with that amendment in the bill. At this point, there's also provision in the bill to reduce some of the requirements for mental health rehabilitation workers, and we're very much in favor of that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Goodnow. I represent, here representing two groups, Kill Two Birds with One Stone. One is the Mental Health Providers of Minnesota, or Association of Minnesota. We support the amendment that was just adopted, and we want to make the commitment that we will continue to work with the author of the bill and the department to come up with language that's mutually acceptable. The other organization that I'm representing is the Minnesota Autism Center, and we do have continuing concerns with regard to the new definition under skills training. We've been discussing that with the department as well, and we're going to continue to work with them. We are one of the groups that they mentioned that are concerned that we may be losing coverage by the change in definition, and we just want some clarification from them on that. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Mr. Larson. And Representative Hosh, I assume on both those comments you're going to continue to work on them.
Mr. Chair, there's amendments already. It just didn't meet the 24-hour rule, and I think we'll be able to deal with it on the floor rather easily.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
I'm Dr. Eric Larson. I'm a licensed psychologist and the director of the Lovas Institute, and I'm also the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Northland Association of Behavior Analysts. And I'm here to point out that as certified behavior analyst, myself and my colleagues provide services under the Children's Therapeutic Services and Support System to children with autism and other disabilities. We think this is an important part of the children's mental health system for children with autism and others. We echo the concerns that Mr. Goodnow raised, but we also support this bill because it is a positive step in refining the CTSS system, in particular the mental health behavioral aid language, could well result in further cost savings for the system. And we hope to be part of the refinements that Representative Bush will be advancing.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness? All right, thank you very much. Seeing no further discussion on the bill, I will renew my motion that House File 1708 be recommended pass as amended and referred to the General Register. Does that language that was just added, that Representative Norton added, Representative Hosh?
Mr. Chair, I have spoken to the department, and they said that they can't guarantee that will cost anything. However, I look at the amendment where it says that the department shall develop recommendations and the commissioner shall engage consumers. It doesn't create a task force or any administration that end.
We will move it to the floor, and then if the fiscal note appears, we'll bounce it back to Representative Huntley's committee. So. Okay.
Okay, I think we're fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All in favor of that motion, then say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. That motion prevails.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes, President Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Haas, really excellent work
Thank you for the committee being nice to me today.
Representative Liebling, yes, we'll move that House File 2069 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Just having been nice to him, you also have to be nice to me, right? Is that how it works? All right, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 2069, that it be recommended to pass and go to
Finance. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is one of those kind of big idea bills that's coming forward this year because of our fiscal situation for the counties and what we've learned about MOE's maintenance of effort and how they put the counties in a real bind, especially now that they're going to have less to work with, and the county's desire to come up with some new ways of working that helps maximize their resources and helps deliver the services more efficiently. And so I am going to let my witness talk about the bill and give you the details and hopefully answer any questions you have.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Kelly Harder. I'm the Human Services Director in Still County, also co-chair for MACSA and their legislative committee. I apologize for my voice. It's been a busy session. important here is what the author of our bill here has said is we've been in front of you many years about trying to rebase the Consolidated Treatment Fund. It takes about $250,000 to rebase to bring get everyone to 15%, and we're all realists and know what the economy is like. And so a plan B, and actually we think could become a real valid point, plan A, was to come up with a proposal that's turned the state county chemical healthcare home pilot project. Those words are very purposeful, as you've all been involved in many hours and hours and days and months of debate around healthcare homes. It really is talking about, from a chemical health perspective, how do we bring the right amount of chemical health care homes to the right person in the right amount of time. We believe this is a proposal that will actually benefit the system in creating more flexibility and an ability to better interface these resources with your chemical, or with your mental health service delivery system, also your primary health care system, and weave these together around care coordination to better improve the overall care for that individual in the community. By no stretch of the imagination are we going to sit here and propose to you that we're going to undo Rule 31, undo Rule 25, or undo the framework of what the Consolidated Fund is about, nor are we suggesting that we would jeopardize any of the Medicaid funding that comes from the feds, which is $8 million, of which there would be another $8 million match. What we're really asking to do with this is, can we create a way and a mechanism to break loose the rigidity of the bureaucratic system of which no one person is responsible for? This isn't a blame bill. This is, how do we create some flexibility, as I say, within the construct of the bureaucracy to give us flexibility to better meet the needs of that individual? If we know that housing, transportation, and or employment type aids would assist the person's sobriety or functioning, then why wouldn't we look to that? This is about a bill about purchasing improved outcomes. And I think providers, the department themselves, we're all sitting here saying we think we can do better with the existing resources. Okay. We have $121.6 million in this line item. If you take $16 million away tied to federal and its regulations, that leaves us well over $104 million to look flexibly at. Now, that's easier said than done. I will admit, we were in front of the Senate yesterday. We had a meeting with the Department of Human Services. They've been very gracious and understanding after we probably put a lot of fear in them initially with this bill. But they've been very good, and they too, I think, and they can tell us that otherwise, if they don't agree, that we think we could do and achieve better outcomes. We have providers here as well, and I would be here too if I was a provider to say, what are those counties up to now? We've deserved some of that concern. But at the same time, the truth of the matter, how I really see playing this out, is we have some logistics we have to work out yet. We're asking to do something that hasn't been done with a fund, with rules and regulations that hasn't been done in this way before. But we believe we have some models and examples in other parts of the department with health care and other areas that we think it's worth taking a run at and going a little further with. Out of respect to the providers, By no stretch of the imagination would we implement anything without them. I would like to look at doing an implications process, the implication wheel process, with providers in the room, consumers in the room, DHS in the room. And let's look at the second, third, and fourth level implications of an initiative like this. But at the end of the day, the counties are bringing forward a proposal that we are saying will assume full financial risk if costs go above and beyond what our three-year capitation average would be. But we're also saying if we manage that well, and I'm not saying no for the sake of no to save money, I'm saying manage it well and only get cost, deep-end costs wherein if needed, but move those services to the community, we think we could reinvest those dollars and we commit them back into the service delivery system along that continuum. We think the consolidated fund is ripe for this type of change and bringing forth, kind of revolutionize this program and bring it into the fold with primary health care, mental health service delivery as well, and we can fully integrate this care and these dollars around those of need in our community. Finally, I would say that this is just one small example. A lot of conversations going on around, you know, the human services redesign. So whether we have 5, 15, 20, 80, the bottom line is the county's all embracing the redesign. This is an example of how we see the redesign can happen. It can happen at a service level, and once we prove that and show that, a lot of lessons learned can be applied to other elements of the service delivery system. And that way we don't go too far and put the lives of individuals at risk. So if we can't figure out redesign on a programmatic level, how are we going to figure out redesign on a macro level across the state is what I would ask. So I'll answer any questions, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. And I don't know if I'm seeing collaboration on every tree, but I think this is exactly where we should be going. And we talked last night about that that child care grant business and that we were, you know, and we have pulled out some policy ideas. And I think I think you've got to hook on this form versus function thing, and I see this as function. And it seems to me as we put together this, you know, some kind of county integration plan that this is extremely consistent with what seems to make sense, where you'd have, you know, we could, you know, what you brought forward as your voluntary thing, we could make you do it. But if we would keep pushing this at our interest, and so we say you have to consolidate function at every little level, you'd have courts, you got chemical, you got the different, you know, the waiver functions, and that there may be no overlap in terms of what counties associate with each other. You may have 15 different associations within one county with different adjacent or even far-flung counties. So I think this is a great way to go, and I hope we can consolidate all these ideas into one idea. I think that if we can do that, this session will have really done something. Mr. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I appreciate you bringing that up, and let me, I forgot to just mention one thing. I've polled unofficially, I call these non-committal commitments from my colleagues. We have enough counties that would represent well over half, if not two-thirds of the state's population that would be affected by this to give you an idea of how popular of idea this might be and what potential change exists. Southeast Minnesota alone is one of our top priorities of how we consolidate 12 counties around one service delivery area. Thank you.
Mr. Gottwald, and then Mr. Melson can make his way down as this question is being asked.
Mr. Chair, I have a small oral amendment as well. If we could do that.
Okay, let's
that's
do
it. Not going to affect the testimony.
Yeah, go ahead.
We can do it at the end.
Whenever you want to do it. Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Liebling and the testifier, I agree this is a great approach. About a week ago, I spent half of a day observing drug court.
Mm-hmm.
New approach, and I'm wondering how this might dovetail with it, because I think these approaches are exactly what we need, and we need to break out of the traditional way of dealing with these things, or really not dealing with them, and start doing it this way. How might that dovetail with something like the drug court effort?
Mr. Chair, Representative Goel, this is the very type of thing, it's a glove and hand deal, because at drug court, when they're in front of a judge, it might not just be only that what chemical health can pay for that's preventing them from maintaining their sobriety, or call it, you know, court to keep them out of jail. We have reentry programs. It's all that other ancillary thing that affects their lives, that affects their usage. And if we can break loose some of these dollars and still serve only the eligibles that are meant to be, we're not looking to go serve, you know, as far as possible, although we would stretch that dollar as far as we can. It's the very thing that could remove the barriers that are the frustrations for the judge and the POs and others, that if I could only have that resource, I could get ahead of this thing versus always chasing it. So I think it should complement it, in my own opinion. Thank you.
Mr. Melton. And Mr. Ms. Skelton? Or Mr. Skelton, I'm sorry.
We have a request.
Or whoever it would be. All right. Welcome to the committee. And we're going to vote on this in about 4 or 5 minutes if we could.
My name is Bob Melton. I'm the past president and current chair of the Public Policy Committee of the March Association. And as we looked at this bill, and we've had an active email list on it, when I was asked to choose whether I was for or against this bill, I was able to give a resounding I don't know. Okay? Because there's a lot of unanswered questions in the way this would be done. The bill's come up very quickly, seems to be moving quickly. There's been a lot of reorganization under for chemical dependency over the last few years. Rule 31, which licenses treatment programs, focused providers on services to individuals, and there's virtually no limit to the services we can provide as long as the county wants to contract. Rule 25 funded those services under an assessment which is clinically based, and it were able to deliver those services under that. Some of the reorganization was encouraged by the legislative auditor's report, which suggested that across the state of Minnesota, there was great discrepancy in the county delivery of services. Some counties did absolutely great. Some counties didn't do so good. Okay? So the state's role at that time, according to the department or legislative auditor, was to make sure that all citizens across the state of Minnesota had access to services. The bill seems to release some entity, whether it's county or groups of counties, from all licensing guidelines, no Rule 31 guidelines. The exemption for Rule 25 was for assessments only. I hesitate. Is Representative Abler still here?
No.
Oh, I can quote him then. Anyway, I believe when we had the exemption for counties that the exemption for counties for people who needed to be licensed was for people who were performing Rule 25 assessments, not necessarily doing group and individual counseling. Is it really needed? Currently, counties can contract for almost any service they want under Rule 31, up to and including liver transplants, in theory. Okay, any service can be contracted under Rule 31. There's almost no limit to what can be delivered. Innovation is very possible. Providers are very innovative and very interested in doing that. Retention of funds by counties is a bit of a concern. Having been involved with this for several years, I would like to suggest that maintenance of effort and changing the eligibility would do a lot to help deliver services also.
Welcome.
Hello. I'm replacing Ellie Skelton. My name is Charlie Michick. I live in Minneapolis. I'm a member of MARCH. I'm also the manager of Regent's Hospital's Alcohol and Drug Abuse Program. And when I first saw this bill, I was also somewhat befuddled and not sure exactly what it was trying to get at. So I have some concerns. I assume the intent, as stated by Mr. Harder, is to improve the delivery and access to services in certain localities, hopefully the entire state. But I believe the bill is so vague about what it's trying to do and who will do it and how it will be done that if it were to pass, it would possibly put some holes into the system that already has problems. Bob Melton mentioned the Office of Legislative Auditor's 2007 report, which did point out that counties in the past haven't done a good job of ensuring equitable access to chemical health care. And it actually blamed the state, Department of Human Services, insufficient oversight and lack of standardized processes. The state responded to that by creating a standardized assessment tool and revised the state rules to improve the process. And while this hasn't been very smooth as it could be, it is moving forward. This bill appears to attempt to skirt these processes and exempt whole counties from these accountabilities, when there's evidence that in the past they haven't been accountable for equitable access. The bill also asks for money that's allocated to insurers who provide prepaid medical assistance plans, or PMAP, to have the money delegated for chemical health services to be essentially carved out and capitated to the counties. there's no evidence that members of these TMAP plans would be able to get the services and that they would be coordinated with other medical care in this fragmented approach. And I think it would create poorer outcomes as a result. Finally, with the budget issues that are facing the state and the rate freezes that already face providers, I feel there needs to be a steady, unified approach as to how the need for chemical health services are identified and then how they're addressed and finally reimbursed in this state, not a fragmented system with no oversight from the State Department of Human Services. The main, quote, victim, unquote, of this bill in my mind, and the reason I'm here today, is the person who needs these services. The national statistics that the Minnesota Department of Human Services released in early 2008 showed that Minnesota was 48th out of the 50 states in providing treatment to our residents. We obviously have work to do. We can always learn better ways to do things, but unfortunately this bill has no specifics in either methodology, cost, or outcome, and does not seem to provide a means to accomplish what I assume the author's aim was. This bill seems to create a specter of a fragmented system which would ultimately make it harder for people to access the care they need. So, thank you.
Okay. Representative Liebling, what was your amendment?
Okay, Mr. Chair, on line 2.33 of the bill, we've got this little report section, and as I was reading the language, it just didn't make a lot of sense that it says right now that each pilot project would report back and also include recommendations on how to implement statewide, and it just doesn't make sense to ask each pilot project to do that. So I'd like to delete the words each pilot project and insert the Department of Human Services. It makes much more sense that that would be who would be reporting.
You never understand that amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Representative Liebling, so I think that, well, I guess we'll vote and see how it comes out. It sounds like there's some work that maybe kind of needs to be done as we move to Finance Committee, but I think that kind of providing some flexibility makes sense. What I'm hearing from the providers is that they don't want to let go of all the requirements that are in place, and so if you, I'm assuming we have a commitment that you'll continue to work with them on this?
Right, sure, Mr. Chair. We would certainly do that. I just wanted to comment, too. You know, this is, you know, obviously we're in this situation where we are kind of doing things at a much quicker pace than we would really like to do, and that obviously we're driven by the economic necessity that we're facing here in the state. And so I think that Mr. Harder would admit that there is some vagueness in the bill, and that's just by necessity. There just hasn't been really time to work out the details in the way that we'd like. But I would like to say that, you know, the comment that we're 48th out of the 50 states, boy, we can hardly do worse than we're doing now. And we did have that hearing with the Tax Committee about, well, actually, I guess it was the Finance Committee.
It was all of us.
Committee, all of us. You know, and when I heard about the maintenance of effort in the chemical health area, I was really shocked at how much variation there is among the counties. And I've been shocked when I heard about how little funding we put into this area. And the kinds of things that the previous testifier said, I'm amazed the counties are able to do as well as they do with the kind of bizarre situation they're functioning under. So I almost feel like even though there's a lot of vagueness in the bill, just to have some pilot projects here, we only have up to go to, it seems to me. So let Mr. Harder comment if you'd like to.
Yeah, I think we'll just vote on the bill, if that's all right. So, Representative Lehman renews the motion that House File 2069 is amended to be recommended pass and referred to Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Thiessen moves House File 1110 to be recommended passed and be referred to the Committee on Finance. And Representative Thiessen has the DE1.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen moves the DE1 to put in the shape that the bill is in.
And Mr. Chair, on yep. Line 16, on page 16, I do have two quick amendments.
Okay.
16, line 15. After the word meet, add the word all or some of. Oh, this is
Okay. All are sum up.
Okay.
And on line 25, at the word meets, all or sum up. So I'd just like to incorporate that if I could.
Okay, Representative Tisa moves, incorporates all or sum off after meet on line 16.15 and 16.25.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, this legislation is the result of a lot of work.
Representative Thiessen, why don't we move the DE1?
Sorry.
Representative Thiessen moves the DE1 to put the bill in the shape the author wants. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, the motion carries. No? Okay, motion carries. Amendment adopted. Representative Thiessen to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the work of a lot of work being done by folks working in the area of providing home and community-based services, and it's really a bill that's aimed at trying to eliminate some of the things that get in the way of them doing their job. Sections 1, 4 through 10, 12, and 13 are about eliminating some duplicative background studies and allowing them to use the same background study for more than one service. Right now, sometimes they have to get multiple background studies, even though they're within the same employer because they provide different services, just to consolidate that. Section 2 similarly deals with licenses, and it's waived if you got to get a license in one county. And then if you serve in another county, you have to get another license from that county. If you're serving only three or less people in that other county, you could just rely on the license in the first county, so that you can kind of break the borders of the county as long as it's not breaking it in a big way. Section 3 allows the utilization of technology to provide overnight supervision under a new license we're creating. And it is under very specific controls, and it would be listed out in the contract about who could be with the people that could be provided those services. Section 11 relates to license holder record keeping, and it has to do with background studies. If you don't hear back on a background study within 40 days, current law is the provider has to follow up with DHS. This would allow for some online background studies and reduce administrative costs. Section 14 eliminates the requirement to do a plan that is not typically is not used by DHS anymore, and DHS is okay with that. Similarly with Section 15, another type of plan. Section 16 allows people to access MSA shelter needy funds to utilize cost-effective services that to better meet their needs. So currently, group residential funding is only available to people in 24-hour supervised living situations. And this bill would allow people to take the equivalent of that money and transfer it in a shelter, supplemental assistance shelter needy funding, to kind of take it with them, even though they're not in 24-hour supervised. And so it creates more flexibility, and I think will actually save us money in the long term. Section 17 is probably the most exciting part, long-term part of the bill, which is to try to take the multiple statutes we have now for home and community-based services and refine them down to a single set of standards for all those types of providers. And that's work that needs to be continued on. Section 18 is work on a common... common service menu. Working with stakeholders to develop a common service menu. And there's some repealers in here in Section 20, getting rid of basically reporting requirements that aren't used anymore. And that, I guess, is the bill, Mr. Chair. And I have witnesses here if there's questions that people have.
All right. There are questions from the...
And I think there's one amendment.
Right. Representative Loeffler has the A2. Representative Loeffler, quickly explain it so we take a vote on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A2 amendment would direct the Commissioner of Human Services to work in consultation with administration, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and representatives, counties, resident advocacy groups, consumers, providers, everyone who's involved in providing housing plus services in any combination, to look at the whole issue of what are we doing with housing, how we buy it, how we incorporate into our rates when we have a lot of families who want to leave housing to their dependents. What kind of system might we want to look at for the future? There's some states that are doing some other innovative things that says, let's put all these ideas on the table, get some creative thinking, and it will also address access to rent subsidies and the development of more handicap-accessible housing, which is another barrier.
Very good.
I think it's great.
All right. Seems great. All right. Reverend Loeffler moves the A to a minute. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, that's good. Ayes carry. Amendment adopted. Anyone in the audience against this bill? Don't look like it.
They've done a lot of work to get people on board.
Okay. Representative Thiessen moves his motion that House File 1110 be recommended passed and be referred to the Committee on Finance as amended. Yes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the ayes carry.
And Mr. Chair, and if I can just, I just want to thank everybody for all their work. This will be our last committee hearing, at least until finance deadline passes. We may have a couple oversight things or whatever later, but thank you everybody for all your work this year, and the pages in particular, Emily and Peter and Ursula and Kate and Linda and Bodo and Dan and all the staff. So thank you.
Okay, meeting adjourned.